Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Carl's Cavern, and of course, Deviant Legion, and nice to have you with us. And today, we have a very, very special guest, but before I introduce her, first I'd like to introduce one of our favorite panelists that comes in from Oklahoma City, and that would be Patrick Crane. Patrick, nice to have you with us today.
Hello, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. This is very exciting.
Okay, and I'm very, very happy as one of our guests, not our main guest, but God knows we love her dearly. We'd love to have her back, and that would be Jeannie Silver. Jeannie, it's absolutely wonderful to read you, my dear.
Yes, I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I'm still kicking.
Yep.
I'm here to cause trouble.
I feel the same way. But today, our very special guest is someone who was, you know, a great actress in the golden age of pornography. And we are very, very pleased and proud to introduce Miss Rhonda Gilpetti. Rhonda, nice of you to be with us tonight.
Thank you, Carl. But I don't know if I was a great actress. I just was working for the
well,
money.
Well, let me put it this way. You certainly kept the screen going for me back then. Trust me. There's no question about it, my dear. You know, so Rhonda, just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the business and that sort of thing. Just give us a little bit of background.
Oh, gosh. You know, I just moved back to California. There's a helicopter over top of me right now. But, you know, I was born in North Hollywood. I grew up in the Valley, pretty much raised by my father, who he was a trailblazer in motocross. So I pretty much lived in the garage with him for 15 years. And then when I was 18, my parents got divorced when I was 16. So by the time I was 18, my father really believed in, you know, when you're 18, you're out. And he even took my truck away from me. So school, I really didn't have a choice but that I hit the road. And I couch surfed for a couple of years, and I needed to make money. So I was looking at the newspaper one day, and there was an ad for world modeling, nude modeling. And I was desperate. So I called up. And, what was his name? Jim South. You know, we started off with the Polaroids. And one day, I guess I was in there with Jim, and Bob Chen came in and Jacob Jacoby. And they got the idea. Well, I went through a year of doing magazines and 8mm. And I did do 8mm with John. And down the road, I met Bob Chen and Jacob Jacoby, and they got the idea, I didn't even know at the time that they met me, about making me a Farrah Fawcett lookalike. So that's kind of how it all started. I was desperate for money, totally deserted me at 18. So that's how it all started.
Okay. So you meet Bob Kim they promote you as a Farrah Fawcett lookalike. And of course, Farrah Fawcett, for those younger listeners who don't know, she was big on Charlie's Angels, and she was one of the great pinups of many of an adolescent boy at that point in time. And so they looked at you as a Farrah Fawcett lookalike, and what happened from there?
Well, I didn't have a clue that they were doing that, but the first film I made was for Bob Chen, Disco Lady. And I'll never forget walking off the set. I don't remember too much of the shooting of it, but I never forget the last day we wrapped. I was walking out. Bob Chen came out and said, Rhonda, what name do you want me to use? And I said, oh, Bob, just use my real name. No, at that time, I was very naive about what I was getting involved in. And I said, just use my real name. Well, believe it or not, that came back to bite me in the ass with my family down the road. And then the next thing I know, Jacob Jacoby comes into the scene with Bob Chen, and they want to make. Now, you have to remember at this time, my biggest thing was making money. I was desperate. even when we started making Little Orphan Dusty, I did not have a clue that Jacob Jacoby was going to use me as a Farrah Fawcett lookalike. So, and that movie was an experience because the first day I got on set, I didn't even know what I was doing. It was the rape scene. And Jacob will already do the rape scene, and then he tells me he wants to do fisting, and I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. I don't know if I can do this.
Oh, shit, so, try. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, there's so much more to say about it, but I was very young and naive. I didn't have a clue what I was getting involved in. I never thought my parents would find out. But when Little Orphan Dusty came out and got busted all over the United States and was in the newspapers, my dad did call me and threatened to break my arms and legs because I used the family name. And many stories after that.
So, yeah, that's tough. I mean, you know, you go in and you trying to make money and that, and yeah, that's tough. And I know, talking to you previously when we were chatting, unfortunately it was not the greatest relationship between you and your father either.
No.
And we'll leave it at that. Patrick, do you have any questions for Ron?
Yeah, I do actually, and I really love Disco Lady. We watch it every New Year's Eve here at the house because it's a New Year's Eve movie and it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a great way to ring out from the year because it's only an hour long and doesn't ask much of you. But I was going to ask, do you remember on Little Orphan Dusty? It was a half and half, where half of it was directed by Jacob Jacoby, and then the other half was directed by Bob Chen. Do you remember who you dealt with more on that set? Was it Bob or was it Jacob?
You know what? I didn't even know Jacob Jacoby was on that set. You just told me something I didn't know. You know, my memory is really bad because I think I have a tendency to black out a lot. But no, I thought Bob Chen was film. You just surprised me. Maybe that's where Jacob Jacoby saw me and moved forward with Little Orphan Dusty, but I don't remember Jacob Jacoby on that set. All I remember is shooting a couple of scenes and walking off after a wrap and telling Bob to go ahead and use my real
right.
name.
No, Disco Lady, I don't think Jacob was. I was talking about Little Orphan Dusty. Because Bob and they did a half and half on that, or Bob said that he directed half, Jacob directed half, and I didn't know which one that you dealt with the most on that set, on Little Orphan Dusty.
It would have been Bob Chen. That's who I mainly dealt with. And it was a cute little movie. It was a cute little movie. And it was my first time doing a full film like that. But, yeah, then Jacob Jacoby came in my life with Little Orphan Dusty, and I didn't have a clue what I was going to experience.
Right.
But then you
got to go back with Bob with Baby Cakes, though, so you got to work with Bob on that one. So that's a good movie. That's a really good one.
Yeah, Baby Cakes came more down the road after that. Like I said, Disco Movie was my first film, and then Little Orphan Dusty. But, you know, I had been shooting 8mm and magazines a couple of years before all that happened.
By the way, talking about
magazines. What year were those films released?
Oh, go ahead, Jeannie. Go ahead.
I was just wondering what year those films were released or done.
78, 79,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, Disco
I think
Lady
it was
is
earlier
78. Yeah, Disco Lady 78. Little Orphan Dusty is also, I think, 78. And Baby Cakes is like 81.
That's the release dates?
Yeah, those are the release dates.
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking a year to 2 years prior. Well, usually a year prior of filming.
Yeah.
Okay. Just trying to get a sense of timing here.
So I was just wondering, when you were doing your photographic shoots, did you ever work with Paul Johnson?
Don't know that name.
Okay, well, Paul's been on the podcast too, and he was primarily photographed for magazines. So I just wondered if you might have worked with him or not.
You know, I know
I don't think she ever did.
Okay.
Well, Jeannie, what I did the first year for We're Modeling, Jim South, he first put me on covers of magazines, and that was easy for me. You know, he kind of broke me into the business. He started out with covers on magazines, and then he approached me about doing hardcore in magazines. And then also just a spreadsheet on me in magazines. So I think I did that for a couple of years first, and then he led me into the 8mm, and then it went down to Disco Lady, a full feature film. So,
okay.
You know, one thing Jim did for me, Jeannie, is he started, I love Jim South. He really knew how to handle me, and a really great guy. I have a lot of respect for him. He started me out slow because he knew I was a nervous wreck about doing this stuff. So he started me, you know, like I said, doing the photos, the covers first, and then, you know, the girl and the, you know, just the layout of me. And then I went into the hardcore magazines. And then after that, I started shooting 8mm. And then I guess Disco Lady came down the road. But I think back in those days, Jeannie, do you agree with me? Back in those days, like in 75 or so, pretty much all that was going on was the 8mm and, you know, the magazines, and there was a lot of hardcore magazine shoots, right?
Well, yeah, because my first one was in 76, and that was the centerfold for Cherry Magazine. And
I remember Cherry.
I went straight into film. Violation of Claudia, Water Power, you know. I didn't do 8mm until later as just picking up side work.
I remember doing 8mm with John Holmes. We were on roller skates. I remember that one. And, so you were a little behind me then, Jeannie.
Probably a little bit, but I was also East Coast and you were West Coast.
This is true, and L.A. was very hot. I mean, the cops were after us all the time, and it seems like everybody was getting busted. I was the only one that never got busted. God was watching out for me, and that's why I moved to New York. Danielle Martin had lived with me a year in Northridge. And when she first started working, and I kind of led her around and told her what was good and what pay she should be getting. But L.A. got so hot that I'll never forget. I found out there that girls were stripping back east and making really good money for appearances at strip clubs. And I told Danielle, I'm going back east because this is too hot here. Everybody's getting busted. And we got to go. Do you want to go with me? And she agreed. And we went to New York.
Right.
But you are an East Coast girl.
Huh?
You are an East Coast girl.
I was an East Coast girl. I mean, I'm originally from Arizona, but, you know, yeah, I moved back east in 76. Actually, I hitchhiked.
New York was very free, wasn't it, Jeannie? In that they didn't care where they shot. And they had live sex shows. In fact,
I mean, all the theaters up and down on you know, Broadway and 7th Avenue, you know.
I loved
all the peep shows.
Oh, and guess what? I met a gay friend that I've known for, God, like 40-some years now. We've been friends. And so we became really good friends in New York. And I took him to his first live sex show on 42nd Street, but it was gay live sex show. And we girls were so embarrassed. We like were down in our seats going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Because it was nothing
I remember.
California.
There was a few places like that, yeah.
Oh, 42nd Street was unbelievable compared to L.A. It was a culture shock for me.
Yeah.
I didn't get to New York until 81. I didn't get to New York until 81. So it was going on the downhill slide. But
yeah,
I loved the Deuce. I just loved the Deuce back then. Of course, I was young, too, so that's part of it. Okay, go ahead, ladies. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I asked the question. So, you know, Patrick, do you have more questions?
Well, do I have more questions? I was going to ask Rhonda if she, I watched the movie Climax from 85 that was directed by Roberta Finley. And I was wondering if you remembered that one. Cause that you don't remember that? Okay. It's credited to Henri Pichard. But anyway, she, I think, just recently fessed up to directing it, but you're very good in it. I think you're actually very good in your movies. I got to say, I think you were something of an actress, so I think you sell yourself a little short there. So, I mean, I think you're really good in that.
Well, you know what?
One.
I remember Peter Wolfe, and I
did.
Peter Wolfe and his Iron Horse magazine, and I did a movie with Ron Jeremy, of all people. Well, I worked with Ron a lot. But I do remember making that, but I don't remember any other movies I made in New York. I just remember that one.
It had Eric Edwards in it, and that's who you were paired with in that one. So,
we'll have to get you a DVD of it, Rhonda, so you can watch it.
Oh, well, do you know I've never watched any of my movies?
I'm the same way. I didn't watch. I've watched one of my films in all, which I didn't do a ton of them, but I've only watched one, and that was to do the commentary on it. And I watched it looking through my fingers, going, "Oh fuck, did I do that?"
Yeah. You know what? I've watched Country Comfort, and a lot of people forget about that film, Country Comfort, and But when I get to the sex scenes, I have to fast forward it. But other than that, I've never watched anything else because I kind of cringe because that wasn't really me. That was me about surviving and making money, and the money was so fucking good.
Right.
You know, that, and I was really good at playing that persona. I knew how to look sexy. I knew how to play it. I was really good at that, but that wasn't the real me. It just wasn't.
It was,
you know,
here's the thing. Everything that we've done has always been a small part of ourselves because otherwise we wouldn't have done it. And that's
right.
Always been my feeling because every weird shit that I've done, and believe me, you know, I've done some weird shit. And it is like, obviously it was me at that time, you know, I did it. Would I do it again now? No, probably not so much. But, you know, I'm not going to regret what I did or something like that. You should never, you know, say, you know, I was in a wrong head space. You were surviving. That's all. You were making money.
Yeah.
Paying the bills.
You know, that's what that actually is one of the things that one of the reasons we do these podcasts. Because, you know, people think of you only in those terms that they see you in a pornographic film.
Yeah.
But there's so much more to your life. Right? Both
exactly.
Of you. You know, like Jeannie, you were in Clownado, and that we really connected over that, you know, but, you know, talking to you, Rhonda, you have, you know, wonderful children and grandchildren and things like that, and you've gone on past this. So tell us a little bit about your life now and the joys in your life.
Real short and simple. I left the business in 86. 2 years later, I got married, And, you know, horses and animals have always been a part of my life when I was young. And when I got married, we bought a place that had 4 acres, and I wanted horses again. And I ended up, within 3 years, after buying some horses, getting my girls on the horses, training and all that, I ended up in Oklahoma City I raised Appaloosas. We were going to the Nationals by year 3 of me breeding and showing horses at the Nationals, won big time against big trainers, and even going to the Worlds after that. I was pretty well known, you know, and that's my niche is horses and breeding. And I even would lay up racehorses and pull the babies out. I mean, where I love to be is in a barn. The smell of horse shit and shavings and hay is my dream. I did that for 26 years. So that's a big part of my life. And I really would like people to understand, yeah, I did what I did back in those days. And you know what? I don't regret it. Time for me to be free. And I didn't want children at that time. The money was so fucking good.
Right.
I mean,
that's exactly, that's exactly what I did. I mean, you know, I worked until AIDS reared its ugly head, and I backed off, and I decided to be a mom and, you know, go on from there. And you decided to be a mom too, and you got to live your dream of being around the animals, because you're one hell of a horsewoman, you know?
You know what? We both kind of did the same thing. Not a lot of us in that industry had children.
No, there's very few of us that have had children. I mean, there's a few, but a lot of them didn't. Not from our era, no.
You know what? Your daughter is gorgeous. My daughter is gorgeous. So we did it. We did good, Jeannie.
We did good.
Absolutely.
We did good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Pat,
go
ahead.
Well, no, I have to say, all those years, I kind of got my yeehaws out of working in porn and being on the road, and I worked 3 weeks at a time, then take 2 weeks off, go for vacation for
exactly.
2 weeks, on the road again. I mean, it was hard work. I mean, when I made appearances at strip clubs, you worked 5 shows a day from noon till 1 in the morning. And that was work. It was really rough work.
But the whole thing is that you were only on stage for an hour and 20 minutes a day, basically.
Yeah,
20-minute show, 5 shows, but the rest of the time was sitting around in those damn dressing rooms or going out and being around the drunk buttholes.
Jeannie, maybe we should talk about the dressing rooms. In that fucking dressing room between shows. Oh, my God. And I would get off the stage. It was good exercise. But you get off the stage, strip, you know, put a towel around you. And I was a big alcoholic back then. I would have bottles of champagne in my dressing room. And I would sit for like 2 or 3 hours, whatever it was, between shows, in a towel, in my dress. It was very isolating, though, too, I have to say. And I would just sit there and suck my warm champagne down, because God forbid if we had a little refrigerator.
Oh, that wasn't even heard of back then.
No.
Yeah.
No, but I have to say, all the owners, most of the owners of where we went to work for, they would pick you up at the airport. And, of course, back then, we always stayed in a Holiday Inn. So there was some mornings that I would wake up, and they all looked the fucking same, and I'd have to pick up the Yellow Pages to see what city I was in or state. You know, it was that much work. We worked 6 days a week, and on Sunday we packed up and flew out to the next gig.
Yep. And then always having to travel with those fucking trunks that were pain in the ass to drag around.
You know what? I still have my 3 trunks.
I have my trunks, too, but now they have legs in them.
Oh, I love it. Jeannie's definitely had the same experience to me.
That brings up something that a lot of people don't realize is how much work it was. You know, you guys, you know, and filming, too. Filming's not the easiest thing to do by any means, not with all the lights and everything.
Oh, shit, no.
You know, people think that doing adult films is you know, oh, we just get to have sex all the time. That's not the case.
Thank you.
No. Yeah, and back in that time frame, there wasn't video cameras. It was the big 35 millimeter, and we had the gaffers and the lighting and everything all sitting there. You had a crew around you. Sometimes the lights would come down too low and a guy would get his balls a little too warm. You know, there was always something. And you'd be on the set all day just to maybe pull off two scenes.
Jeannie, let me ask you this. You know, we became very professional in shooting these movies. And were you like me? Like, if the lighting wasn't right, we'd tell them, oh, move that one. And I'm only working with this guy. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I was very picky on who I worked with.
Me too. And then the people we worked with were moonlighting from the studios. I mean, they're very professional people. So I think me and you were very professional with what we did to make sure the lighting and continuity. I was really big. Like, there was supposed to be a bottle there. Why didn't you guys put the bottle back? And if they tried to pull...
Well, we had people on set for the continuity with the Polaroids. I mean, usually there was somebody there, you know.
Yeah, but weren't you like me? That you were like, you became more of a producer and controlling your set, that you were very aware of everything. And we were working with professional people on the 35 millimeters.
And I never fell for the last minute, oh, we've decided, like, what was it? I think it was Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll for Fred Lincoln. They were like, oh, we're going to have you do anal with Joey Cervera. And I'm like,
I don't do anal.
I'm like, sorry, I don't do anal. I'll fake anal. We can fake it, which I did. The best anal scene you've ever seen.
Jeannie, we ended up faking the fist fucking in Little Orphan Dusty. Jacob Jacoby.
There you go.
Casting. Yeah. We became professionals towards the end, didn't we? We could have shot a movie ourselves. Oh, my God.
Anyway, so poor Patrick. Patrick, you have any questions?
No, this is fascinating, and I'm glad that Carl brought that up because, you know, I do. I'm also one of these people where I'm very, very fascinated by how much work goes into all of this. So I'm glad that that was brought up, and I'm glad y'all were talking about that because, yeah, I encounter that a lot with, you know, with what I do when I, you know, because I write about adult motion pictures from the golden age, and, you know, I get a lot of that about, you know, how, you know, simple all of it must seem and all of it, but I'm one of these people that are very, I'm completely bowled over by the amount of work that I see that goes into all of that. And also when I listen to interviews with adult figures, how, when they talk about just what a grind it was, and, you know, so my hat's off to you, you know, because that's just an incredible feat of the power and strength.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is that these films were shot very quickly. Okay. So the amount of work that you're doing within a 2 or 3 day shoot, and that's probably pushing it, you know, 3 days, is just amazing about what they get done. Even if it's an hour, 15 minute feature, that they are able to get this done and then do post-production so quick and get them out. You know, it was like, wow.
Yeah, I think one weekend we shot Brooke Does College, Hypersexuals, and Piggies all in the same weekend.
Yep.
Wow.
You know, and then having to remember which script you were working off of. That always was fun.
You know, Jeannie, you talk about scripts. I still have a couple of scripts.
Oh,
over.
You can have those copies.
I know. I have a lot of stuff. But you know what? I did work on films that would last 5 days or maybe 7 days. I did 2 movies for Freeway Films when I came back after kind of eluding and hiding after Little Orphan Dusty's bust. And what was his name? Armin for Freeway Films. And then Susan, his niece, who had a relationship with John for like a year. But me and John, he hired me after my disappearance for 2 years to go to Sweet Dreams Suzanne and another Suzanne. We did 2 films in 2 weeks. But the problem was we were shooting 24/7. And me and John both brought an ounce of coke apiece. By the end of 2 weeks, I was so wiped out, they had to prop me up in a chair and put a mask on my face. And I think that was the last film I shot in California. Was Sweet Dreams, Suzanne, and then there was another one about about Suzanne. But, man, it was hard work, and we would work 24 hours a day just to get it done. It was hard work.
It was. It wasn't simple and easy. There was a lot of drugs on the sets and stuff like that. I did my share of drugs, but because back then I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD, but I am now, I found out that while everybody was doing coke and staying up all day, I was the one sleeping in the corner because the coke would actually put me to sleep.
Oh, wow.
I was medicating myself back then. Yeah, so I wasn't big into the coke or the occasional drink. That was, I'm lucky that way because some of our friends got into much heavier shit,
Yeah.
Right.
The heroin and then the
Well, Jeannie, let me tell you, you remember this. When I left New York and quit the business in 86, a lot of my friends in the business, girls, was starting to smoke cocaine or base cocaine.
Oh, God, everybody was freebasing. Oh, my God. What a nightmare that was.
I'll never forget going to say goodbye to Candy Barber. She was living in a little one-bedroom apartment, studio, and she was prostituting then and doing base. And then I went, who I love to death to this day, is Susie Nero. I went to go say goodbye to her. What a sweetheart, beautiful girl. And she was facing. And I remember leaving because all I ever did was snort it and eat it. But I remember leaving during that time in 86 that facing was getting so out of control. Thank God I never pasted. And I haven't done cocaine since 86 when I left. But, man, talk about burning $100 bills every day. And
I tried it a couple of times and I was like, no, this is a waste. I'm not wasting my money. I was too involved in making sure my rent was paid. My bills were paid. That always came first. And then I would party. Where a lot of our friends back then were party, party, party. And oh my God, am I going to be able to pay my rent?
Well, before that I had a nervous breakdown before 86, and I got sober, and I tried to keep working for a couple more years. My last film I ever did was they flew me to San Francisco for, what's the name of that movie? Satisfaction. That's the last movie I ever did. And but I could no longer work anymore after 2 years of being sober. I just couldn't do it. And I remember going to my manager, and I said, I'm done. I can't do this sober anymore. So that's in 86. I left and went back to L.A. and lived with my sister for a while until I got on my feet.
Good.
Yeah, that's around the time that I quit also, and I went into bartending and restaurant management.
So Rhonda,
in 89, I got pregnant and moved back to Arizona.
That's when I got
Rhonda, I wanted to ask a quick question because I know we had someone on who has now passed away that was a real good friend of the podcast, and I know that Jeannie knows him very well. But I wondered if you ever worked with Carter Stevens.
I know the name.
She never did.
No.
Okay.
I know the name. But you probably didn't.
No, okay. I've known pretty much everybody that worked with Carter because him and I were roommates. And even though I didn't work on all of his films, and he was around early in the early 70s, but Rhonda was on the West Coast early on, and Carter
right.
was all yeah. East Coast.
Rhonda was in Tinseltown, which is a Carter Stevens film. It's his one and only West Coast film, and it was in 1980.
Oh, okay. Call me wrong. Tinseltown. I forgot about that film.
She's in that.
Okay, well, in my defense, I was in Arizona in 1980. I think I was trying to get out of jail. No, just kidding. 1978 in Rhode Island with Annie Sprinkle and Matilda the Hun. That's when I was trying to get out of jail.
I love Annie Sprinkle.
Oh, yeah.
Georgina Selvine. Can you believe Georgina is still around today? And what a great actress she was. I worked with her in Country Comfort.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised.
Well, Georgina is incredible. She's incredible. Did you
know
that she was a backup dancer to, what was it, like Liza Minnelli in Cabaret, I think.
Wow. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's really
class,
something.
Class act and a total badass.
Oh, yeah.
I have a lot of
respect for her. Shirley MacLaine's understudy, I think, right? Maybe.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
Maybe Sweet Charity?
That's it. That's exactly it.
That would make more sense.
She was phenomenal to work with. She was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love Julia Sullivan.
She's
great.
She's still great.
I'd love to have her on. God. That would be great. So just give us a little more info of what you remember, Rhonda, and what you want to basically say, you know, how you've gone through life and that sort of thing, and just give us a little more.
Well, let me just say this. I wouldn't change my life for anything. Even though I went through a really horrible childhood, but yet my dad gave me a lot of gifts, too. And, you know, I raced motocross for 15 years with him in desert. I lived in that garage with him, but I always had my horse down the street. So after that experience, I went into porn, the experience in porn, I didn't have any children. I wasn't married. So I was okay with what I was doing and making all the money. And getting my yeehaws out, I don't think too many people can say they had that experience, like me and Jeannie and the other girls. It was extraordinary. Again, I wouldn't change any of that. And then when I walked away, I met a man. They gave me children. I lived 26 years on a horse ranch, and we built a huge corporation together. I was able to stay home and do the horses, do my kids. I raised his two kids, too. I have beautiful children, grandkids, and my loving family, my mother, my sister. They've never judged me. They've always had open arms for me. They've always been compassionate to me and very supportive. So, no, I wouldn't change my life for anything. I feel, though, sometimes I have a good perspective on what I did. I'm sure Jeannie feels this way, that we were working and we know where a lot of people think, oh, you just enjoyed the sex. No, me and Jeannie know it was work.
Not necessarily. It wasn't about the sex. Believe me, the sex was too much frickin' work. You know, it was all about the money, honey.
Yeah, let's get the money side. Let's do this angle. Let's do that angle.
It was all about the money. Sex we could have anytime, anywhere, and we wouldn't have to be on set to do it. So, no. Working on set, having sex, that wasn't enjoyable. No, you couldn't even, you know, get a nut off, you know, because it was like, oh, no, now move to this position. Oh, wait, can you move her over to this position? Oh, can you open your legs a little more? Yeah. No, that's not enjoyable.
I really wish that people would understand that, because I do get on Facebook here and there, and I do have those people that come after me. Oh, did you like having a cock in your mouth? Did you like? And I'm like, oh my God, you don't even have a fucking clue.
Oh my God, I have to block their asses, because that's. I mean, they wouldn't even. Yeah,
I won't.
You send me a dick pic and you're blocked.
Exactly, yeah. And I do that. If you don't get it, God, I was a performer. So was Jeannie. We were performers,
yeah.
And we knew our job very well, and we were very professional.
It was honey? It was a job. It was a job. The J-O-B. Yeah.
And it,
give me the money and go on to the next thing.
You know what? It could pay $1,000 a day. It was good fucking money. And we had good friends. I think also, Jenny, back then, all of us girls and the guys, it was a great family. And even till this day, like Hallie Gordon, Eric Roberts, Paul Thompson, I mean, and all the girls, we all get along so great if we have to go for a book signing or something. When we get together, it's nothing but open arms. I mean, we're family. You'll never find that
again. Yeah, it was a much closer gang back then. We had, you know, but nowadays there's thousands of these people who don't even interact with each other, and they don't even know background stories of each other or have any interest, you know.
No.
We kind of grew up with everybody.
Yeah, we're all there for each other. We're all there for each other. We love each other. And nobody's had that experience like all of us did back in the 70s and 80s. Today,
but we still have it now, like you said.
Majority
of us. There's a few of us that aren't speaking anymore to each other. But, you know, there are a few of us that, you know, have stuck together.
Yeah, and if I was really in trouble, I could call on Howie. I could call on Eric. I could call on Susan. I can call on you, Jenny. Are you kidding me? They'd be there for me in a heartbeat. It's a family
nobody
will ever break and never see again.
Right, and that's
never
one of the things that's true about that era. That comes through by the acting, by the camaraderie, by everything, that you all were in this together, you know. And today, you know, I mean, since video took over in the 80s and that, it changed the whole feel of that.
Yes.
And it was just product anymore. There wasn't any real sense of it being a film or being, you know, we're in this project together, right?
Family.
And it's a common denominator in all the interviews that you do from people from our era. We will all say about family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
It was my family.
And to be honest, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying they are our family. Until this day, they're still our family.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, all I was going to say was that I was not involved, but I'm glad that I can be a part, and this podcast can be a part of reliving that era of family, and to have Jeannie on here, and Jeannie knows how much I adore her and that, and I can tell the same thing to you, Rhonda. It's wonderful to have you on.
Carl?
What?
We didn't really need you today. Me and Jenny could have done this.
I'm just back here just like hanging out, listening to you two. This is the greatest fucking show.
We're running the show, damn it. Now go get in the bathroom and sit there until we're done.
Me and Jenny can
do
this for hours, but I love you, Carl.
And if I'm doing that, poor Patrick in the background.
I know.
I love listening to them talk, and that's really, you know, listening to that, to get that history, that oral history of all of that. And again, to reiterate what y'all have said, I mean, I love that y'all share a sisterhood and a friendship and a family that it's so unique. I think about that, how all of you, the Golden Age stars, are in such a rarefied class that will never be duplicated. And the kind of camaraderie that y'all have that you see in the interactions that you have over social media, it's so great to see. And I'm just pleased as punch to be able to talk to you, because I think y'all are legends.
You know what?
Wait, send us money.
When we were doing these films back, you know, Jeannie, you
I'm sorry. I'm a troublemaker. I can't help it.
No, listen,
we
you
love
gotta
you for that, Jeannie.
Jeannie, you have to agree. What we were doing back then, we were trailblazers, but we were in that era of like freedom of speech and all that, and we were like, "Fuck you." We were trailblazers back then. We didn't give a fuck. We were gonna go for it. And
yeah,
nobody,
we made porn before it was legal to make porn, but we made it legal.
Yeah,
what
true.
An experience.
Absolutely.
What an experience. It will never be seen again. But
no.
Me and Jeannie got a lot out of it. We have great family with these people. Family. And, like, I'm sure Jeannie feels the same way I do. I wouldn't change anything for anything. I wouldn't change that for anything. It was a great experience.
Yep. It was a great experience.
And we were trailblazers.
You know,
absolutely.
So I wanted to say one other thing before we start wrapping up here, is that, you know, the sense of this oral history is one of the reasons why, you know, we want to have you, you know, people from this era on, because I don't think a lot of people, a lot of younger people, understand the pressures you were under and what you accomplished. You know, these days you look at porn, it's, you know, you get free porn on the net, and people, you know, there's so much product out there that it's ubiquitous. But back then, you were up against censors, you were up against the police, you were up against so many, you know, difficulties, and yet you prevailed. And I think that's one of the greatest things to say about any of you people that were in that era. So go ahead. Sorry.
Carl, we had to live under that veil that we were prostitutes, and we did a lot of hiding out, and yes, the cops were after us. And, it took a pretty brave person to be involved in that business back then, you know?
Yeah.
But yet, we were young, and in that era, we were all about freedom of speech, and we were going to go for it, all of us. Sharon Mitchell, I can name so many names. And we were ready to live on the edge. We did live on the edge. Yeah, we did, and I think we loved it.
And we're still alive.
Yeah. Wow.
I know. Isn't it amazing? I was like, you know, I never thought I'd live to be my 30s, you know, with all the shit that was going on. So, you know, look at us. We survived.
Yeah, and then we went and had children.
Yeah. Lots of men. Those poor things. No.
And should I mention that you just had a birthday not too long ago?
Ronda, I got a question. Do your children know about what you did?
In the 90s, well, when my kids got to be like 13, 14, at that time, like in the early 2000s, well, I think they learned a lot around 2012 because they were like in junior high. And back in those days, to be a porn star was like the message out through the 90s and that in the 2000s was, oh, I want to be a porn star. I mean, it became really popular to be a porn star. So I was, what happened to me, my son was playing baseball, and I had not been recognized by any of the parents or horse shows at that time. You know, I was always worried about that, somebody recognized me, but it never happened until I was at a baseball game with my son, and one of the ladies recognized me, told her husband, and it went crazy after that. And my kids came to me, but this is at the time, remember, Jeannie, in the 90s and early 2000, it was good. Everybody wanted to be a porn star.
You were porn chic.
Yes. So when my kids found out, oh, Mom, that's so bitchin', you were a porn star? And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Are you kidding me?
oh, Mom, that's really neat. But to tell you the truth, now they're 30 and 33, and they could really give a shit about it nowadays.
Right.
But, you know, back then, they were okay with it because they thought it was really neat. But that's from the 70s and 80s, that was a really bad thing to be because you were considered a prostitute. And then when the 90s came along, it was really neat to be a porn star.
Yeah.
That
right.
was when all Vivid and all the contract girls and you make $1 million a year happened and, you know, everybody
right.
thought it was really neat. And it was legal then, too.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my experience with my kids. No, they're fine with it.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And your daughter.
My daughter hates it. No.
Does she really?
No.
No.
Are you kidding? My daughter's in the fetish world. Please.
I know. I thought, come on. Oh, that went right over my blonde head.
I was being sarcastic.
I know.
But my daughter didn't find out until she was 21. I didn't
really?
Let my daughter know anything until she was 21. And she called me and she says, you know, I did a thing on the internet. I looked up the one-legged stripper and I saw your tattoo on this girl. And she goes,
oh
did
God.
You do porn? Were you Long Jean Silver? And I hung up the phone on her.
Were you scared?
And then I called her back and I said, okay, well, let's get this out. And, you know.
Well, thank God I had the experience.
She was in college.
Oh, wow. Well, thank God I had the experience. My kids thought it was cool. In fact.
Yeah,
my daughter
thought it was cool, too. She was like, and you've got a wiki page. And I'm like, what? What's a wiki? I didn't even know what a wiki page was.
And by the way, Rhonda, you do, too, if you don't know that. You have a wiki page.
I looked it up once. I'm terrible on the internet. You know, I'd rather be in a barn full of horses, to tell you the truth. I don't even have
no,
a
absolutely.
Computer. I don't even know how to turn on a computer. I'd rather be shoveling horse shit. Tell you the truth.
What do you think we've been
that
doing
be,
all day
that,
here?
That should be the name of your biography. I'd rather be shoveling
yeah.
horse shit.
There you go.
I like it.
And
I
like
right.
it too.
So, ladies, we're going about ready to end up here. We usually do these for an hour, but I'm gonna take it around. Patrick, do you have any more questions or anything you want to say to the ladies?
No, I think we covered a lot, actually, in just freeballing. And I, again, just thank you so much, for both of you, for coming on. And this has been a real thrill for me. I enjoy listening to y'all speak. And I enjoy y'all's presence on social media. And I look forward to interacting with you further on down the road. And thank you again for coming on.
Well, you know what? It's too bad I'm not going to Oklahoma every summer for the Appaloosa Nationals, or I'd meet you for lunch. But I'll
oh,
never
yeah,
get
yeah,
you
yeah.
You know, you have all
you
your Nationals in Oklahoma. They have all the Nationals
oh,
for
yeah.
every breed of horse. The Oklahoma Fairgrounds is phenomenal. They have like a coliseum there that's air conditioned, and you have your barns outside. But always love going to Oklahoma for the Nationals every summer. But I don't do that anymore. So, but if I would have known you back then, I would have gone and had lunch with you.
Aww.
Well, that would have been nice. If you ever find your way down here one day. But,
well,
you know.
You know what? I do have a girlfriend that just moved to Norman, Oklahoma this last year. So if I head that way, I'll hit you up to go visit her.
All right.
He loves it.
And I have to say, Miss Rhonda, on that sense, too, if you're ever in the New York area, back to Metro NYC, let me know and I'll take you out to lunch.
Well, I tell you what, if you're ever in L.A., because I don't ever want to fly again. I did too much flying. I'm so over it. If you're ever in L.A., hit me up and we'll meet for lunch.
Well,
there's a good chance
I might be in Fresno because my ex-wife is out there. And we're still very, very close.
There you go. I'm always around, honey.
There you go. All right.
Jeannie, thank you so much. Jeannie,
Yeah, and I want to thank you all for not inviting me to lunch. So, you know.
Excuse me. I taught you. You are Latin. I will take you out to lunch anytime you're up here. Anytime.
Anytime you're in Oklahoma City.
Me and Jeannie lived in I lived in Arizona for 5 years, but I was up north. Shame on us for not having lunch today, Jeannie. But, you know, I became a real home buddy. You know, I like being home and watching my TV and my dog.
You're a home buddy, and I'm here taking care of my mom with dementia, so getting away is really hard for me to do. So,
I know that. Well, I really miss Arizona. I mean, that's God's land. It really is God's country. I really miss Arizona.
Yeah, unless it's summer.
That's true.
I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Ciao.
Okay, and I want to thank you for coming on with me today.
Okay, I was there to give you support and hold up your other end.
We'll be in touch. Love you, baby.
And you got my wife's phone number now.
No.
Bye, Jeannie.
Bye.
Okay, you ladies, take care. Rhonda, I'll be in touch for sure. Okay?
Thank you
very much for being on. And Jeannie, you're always welcome back. You just let me know.
I will.
All right. So at this point, we're going to do a quick a recap of what we're doing, what we like to call housekeeping. Patrick, stick around for a second. All right. So right now, just to let everyone know, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, we're going to have Vicki on, Vicki Love, my ex-wife, and she's going to do another update of her film journal on her film that she's producing and her son is directing called Lake. And we're going to have that on Wednesday. On Friday, we have Cathode Ray Mission with Adam Ferenz. And that's they're going to be talking about the films of Kelly Reichardt. On Saturday, I'm going to be doing a music show with PC. And it's going to be all the new bands that I have found through YouTube Music Premium. And I was granted a family pass on that, and it's amazing. And I've learned so much of new music, so we're going to do that. And on Sunday, we've got Rock This Town Radio with TC, and he's going to be doing a show about Brian Setzer and all the music from Brian Setzer from all his bands. Also, I can tell you this, we just got confirmation from Scott Goldberg, and hopefully next week we'll have Scott on. Scott is the director of Forest Hills. That's the new movie coming out, a horror movie, and that has Shelley Duvall in it in her first film in a number of years. Also, our friend and fellow podcast guest, Alan Austin James, is just back from Europe, and where he was doing some work on films, and he's got his second film completed, and he's going to be talking about that, and it has a new premiere out in L.A., in June. So we'll be talking to Austin Allen James in the next week or so. And I'm very, very happy. And we've got lots more coming this month. It's going to be also commentary watches on folk horror movies. And we've got those coming up next week and for the rest of the month. So Patrick, so any last words about our guests? I love it when you have the two of them.
Just such a great time. I loved it.
Absolutely. So is Jeannie still with us here?
No, I think she left. I'm still here, though.
Okay. So Rhonda, again, as I said, I'll be in touch, but listen, my dear, anytime you want to be on, you want to talk about something, just hit me up. You are more than welcome, and you're part of the family now. And I want you to know that.
Thank you.
Well, there's so much to talk about through those years, you know, and I just loved having Jeannie on today, you know, because we can banter back and forth about our experiences. So thank you so much. Anytime you need me, just give me a call. You know, I'm retired now. I just kind of hang out with my dog and watch a lot of TV. And
okay, fair enough. I can do that, absolutely. And, Patrick, one other thing is, if you ever consider it, you know, I mean, I'd love you to front a podcast and maybe really work on doing the adult films and see who we can get and so on and so forth. So let's talk about that offline, okay?
Sure. Sure, sure. I'm for that, for sure.
Okay,
absolutely.
Guys.
Fair enough.
That was fun. That was fun. And thank you so much. I mean, I do want to get the word
you,
up
Rhonda.
There that we were real stars and that we worked hard for what we did and we were trailblazers. And, I mean, it was a great experience, you know. And I want people to see us in the real light of who we really were. We were performers. You know, it was not about sex, like Jeannie said. It was about work and producing and getting something on film. It was, and I wouldn't change it for the world. So thank you, guys. You know, I'm always available, Carl. You call me anytime. I think we had
a
great show.
Okay, thanks, sweetie. Okay,
thank you very much, Rhonda.
I'm going to go get a cheeseburger because I lived in northern Arizona. There's no fast food there, and I just moved back to Cali. And there's fast food on every corner. But I'm going to go get a cheeseburger.
Come
In-N-Out
for me, okay? I love In-N-Out.
Hit that In-N-Out.
My save. Okay, love you guys. Thank you.
Okay, love you, Rhonda. Thank
you
very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
And thank you all for listening. Thank you very much, Patrick. And this was a great show, and I loved it. It was wonderful. So, again, thank you very much all for listening. Thank you, Patrick. And we'll see you tomorrow with our show with Vicki Love and her film journal on her film Lake. So we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Here we go.